You are listening to David Kaplan. Weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Happy Friday to everyone. Cap is off today with Sylvie and Fred Huebner filling in. Now bringing in Bleck and Abdallah as they will go from 11 to 220. Then we've got the Pinstripe Bowl in our normal Waddle and Sylvie spot. So things different during bowl season. We've got all the bowl games. And a lot to discuss on this final Football Friday, boys.
Absolutely, Sylvie. And Abdallah and I are just looking to do every show here at the station today. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get a little Cap and Company. Then we're going to go to Carmen and Yurko. And then we're going to try and do our best for a half an hour during your time slot.
That's right. You guys are in three spots.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to it.
It should be easy for Chris to go, we're in for Carmen and Yurko. Yeah, and now we're in for Waddle and Sylvie.
Yeah, host roulette. That's what we're going to do.
I still say Waddle and Sylvie when I'm with Fred. You know, when I'm on at 9. I did that once today, and I tried to tell myself, don't do it. It's Cap and Company, but you're so used to saying the same thing over and over.
Well, it's okay. During Cap's time slot, you just have to kind of live your life like you're David Kaplan. And, you know, you get up early, you get a workout in, you cryo, you eat what? He eats like rabbit food.
Oh, hold on one second. My water is talking to me. Oh, it's time to drink. Hold on.
He actually just eats the yolks, not egg whites. He's gone full opposite. Only yolks. He throws out the egg whites. Only yolks.
I don't want to go Zetterman on everyone, but isn't that something that's proven to be BS, is that egg whites are healthier than...
Yeah, you should eat the whole egg.
That it doesn't cause high cholesterol, and it's good cholesterol, and that's where all the vitamins are, in the yellow, not in the white.
Yes, it is. And now we've covered every show and podcast on the station.
There you go.
There it is.
I am the armchair nutritionist.
If you want to get up early and go fishing, I hear it's going to be a little warmer out. The salmon might be biting a little more tomorrow.
Is that a thing?
That's a Chauncey portion of the show.
Got it. Sylvie, so you guys talked a lot of Bears today. Your question about the Bears in the last decade I thought was really interesting, because as you went through the different options, each time I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. And then you go to the next one, and you're like, all right, that's it. Because the point you made about the 2010 team that lost in the NFC Championship game, shouldn't that be number one?
It should.
Because it was the closest the Bears were, the best they were.
Unless you're saying that if Mahomes was here, they'd be multiple playoff visits and maybe would win a Super Bowl. Because Mahomes or Watson would be here, and it would open a window instead of just having a one-year flash and then having a quarterback regress.
But that has more ifs and buts to it. You know, the if game with the NFC Championship game after that 2010 season was, if Cutler stays healthy in that game, you probably win that game. You're in the Super Bowl.
You think. And I said to Abdallah yesterday, I said, in three times in my life, I believe it is, the Bears hosted the NFC Championship game, because I believe in 84 they got to the title game, but it was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So they get in 85, they lost one of these to San Francisco. But I was used to them winning. You know, they beat the Rams. They beat the Saints in the more modern day in 06, in the 06 season. But then this year, here we had them, and it was Packers. I mean, like, do you remember this?
Yeah.
Like how the Bears and Packers, like, hadn't played in the playoffs, and here we go since, like, the modern division scenario.
The buildup for that game was the most epic, fun week working here I can remember, outside of winning a championship. When the Cubs won the World Series, that was different. But, like, that week, the buildup for Bears-Packers NFC Championship game, Jay Cutler playing well, the defense, championship-level defense, Urlacher still with the team, everything kind of fitting together.
Peppers in his prime.
Yeah, like that was such a big deal, and it happened at the start of the decade, so I feel like we kind of weigh that less when we look at the
current... Yeah, I don't know how double doink can be worse than losing to the Packers in the game to get to the Super Bowl.
That's just because of recency bias, I think. And I don't know, I didn't agree with the... I don't think drafting Trubisky is at the top, just because if we're talking about the worst... The way you phrase it, I'm all into the phrasing. You phrased it, worst moment. In that moment, we didn't know where we'd be today.
Unless you were Mike Lennon. That was for him, he'd answer that one, because the Bears sent him to their draft party.
Dude got his money. It's not like he didn't get paid.
No, you're right.
And he's still getting paid. He's on the Raiders.
It's amazing how much he's gotten paid, too.
So I don't feel bad for Mike Lennon at all. Dude's got a ton of money and a very long neck.
Yeah, the double doink, I would not put over losing in the NFC Championship game. Drafting Trubisky, I see your point Sylvie, because you're right. If you put in Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes, now I think things, obviously, this year they would be different. Last year, who knows? You probably don't have to go to that field goal, the double doink anyway.
Next
because
year,
you have a better,
the year after.
Yeah, right. Like, everything heading into 2020 seems so much better anyway. And the Trubisky option is just so bad when you look at the larger scope of this franchise. And I also heard you talking to Fred about Fred trying to point to there are games where Trubisky has looked good. Therefore, there's potential there. And you questioned him, like, how can you say that there's potential?
Right now. Like, again, they're just too few and far between. And we read the quarterback index of Dallas, something that we've talked about on the show. Trubisky's 28th right now. And the four quarterbacks who are worse are all, like, it's Will Greer and those guys. And they listed the stat about the Bears are 4-1 when Trubisky is a quarterback rating above 80. But there are too many games when he's below 80. He has the most games below 80 for any starting quarterback. And the average quarterback rating now is like 90 point something. And there are too many games that he doesn't do anything with the offense. And Nagy's partly to blame, and the offensive line's partly to blame, but we know what the greatest equalizer is and the greatest deodorant is. It's the quarterback. He can make everybody better. That's who the most important position in all of sports is, and we don't have a good one.
And I think the thing with Trubisky and what makes him so polarizing is that it's less obvious to why he's so ineffective as a quarterback. You know, with Jay Cutler, it was obvious to people why he was bad. Decision making, bad interceptions, he would be the meltdown. And when he played poorly, it was usually because he made one mistake and then he had another, and they snowball effect down the mountain into an avalanche.
Interception games.
Right. Like, and he didn't come back from the fact that he was having a poor game. It was rare that he was able to. I remember there was a game in Detroit. He was getting the crap kicked out of him.
Yeah.
And he came back in the fourth quarter and he was the best player on the field.
I think I was at that game. Was that the Monday night game in Detroit?
Yeah, probably.
When he was in, people at that time were talking about Cutler like a possible MVP candidate.
Yeah, right.
Because he wasn't making the mistakes that he had made before.
Right. And like, with Trubisky, he doesn't melt down, so it's less obvious to people because what do? They go running towards the interception number, and the interception number is low. I agree. I saw Cap earlier today retweeting tweets about applauding the low interceptions from Mitch Trubisky, but a part of that is if you watch and consume NFL football is you have to understand he's also not really throwing it downfield at all. Thus, the risk level that Trubisky plays with is low.
What's worse, leaving 6 points on the field because you missed a wide open Allen Robinson or a wide open whoever, or throwing a pick at the 50? Do you know what I mean? That took points off the scoreboard.
Yep.
His lack of accuracy many times this year by missing that one play. And then the other part that they all come back to, the Trubisky truthers, is after playing a bad game, because I was talking to Abdallah about this, you do have to give him some credit because he does rally, but he's the reason why he has to rally.
Right.
And like in the Denver game, or in the Green Bay game, or when they rallied the Giants game. You know, there have been games where, at least in the fourth quarter, he's been better, and everyone's like, oh, there he is.
The game they point to the most is the Eagles game. Remember that Eagles game? They had, 9 yards of total offense?
Yeah, or the playoff game.
Right, the playoff game, too. And in the second half, he had a couple of nice throws this season against the Eagles, and then people are starting to applaud it. And it's like, did you miss the entire first half where the Eagles ran out by 20 points and where the game was over, basically? The same thing happened against the Chiefs on Sunday night. You know, the Chiefs game was over by the time halftime took place.
They went from 9th in points per game last year to 30th this year. Like, it's incredible. Like, I can understand maybe a small drop, but you shouldn't have dropped at all. The conversation this whole offseason leading up to this season was the defense is going to regress a little bit, but the offense needs to take a step up. They were 22nd in overall DVOA last year. The offense went down to 25th in overall. You can't have that happen. And I understand growing pains, people have tape on you, whatever, but going from 9th in points per game to 30th in points per game, that's crazy.
So many numbers are just like that, Abdallah. If you look at yard pass attempted,
yeah, I've heard you say this.
The number last year was 14th. Trubisky was 14th, which means you're going down the field. You're making the defense not stack the box against box against you. This year they're 32nd. They're the worst team in all of football this season. And what is that? Is that play calling? Well, it could be, but a lot of that is your quarterback's eyes immediately go down the moment he drops back and he can't stretch the
down.
Field.
He's checking down when there's guys that are open downfield.
Absolutely.
He's not a good decision maker.
And I know it was put out on social media, and if you're watching the game on Sunday night, the play where he threw into triple coverage over the middle, there were two Bears wide receivers on the outside, on each side of him, who were open, who had two steps on their defenders. So if he would have gone left or right, he would have hit someone in stride for a touchdown. Instead, he threw it over the middle into triple coverage, and it bounced off miraculously. And it seems like Trubisky is the luckiest quarterback I've ever seen in my life, where he throws interceptions that don't actually get picked off. I know people will come running at me saying that that's not what the analytics say, but I've watched it with my eyes. Trubisky is always throwing picks that don't turn into interceptions.
Even if they're not interceptions, it's well, when we criticize Cutler and say decision-making, because he threw to the same guy four times on Washington, like those are picks. But if Trubisky's making the wrong decisions because he's not reading the field correctly, or if he's checking down too quickly, if he doesn't trust his footwork and he's, you know, doesn't want to hang in a little bit, that's still decision making. It may not result in an interception, but it's still not good decision making.
But it's even bad decision making when he is trying to survey the field and move around or whatever, and he steps out of bounds 2 yards behind the scrimmage instead of just throwing the ball away.
Have you guys ever seen that from a
Fred
quarterback?
Fred told me they were punting anyway, so it didn't mean anything.
But 2 yards back is 2 yards back. What? It doesn't matter.
How about
when the team comes offsides, when the defense comes offsides, and throws it into the dirt or goes to his checkdown? It's like, what are you doing? Take a shot downfield.
23.
Yeah, what difference does it make? It's insane.
He's an athlete playing quarterback. That's the end of the story.
And Waddle has always said that to us. You know, and we, again, like I phrased it to, there's no other way to put it than this. On our show all year, Waddle had phrased it, it's the year of Mitch. Mm-hmm. All right? This is it. Second year in the system, third year in the game. You've had a lot of starts now. What you got, Mitch? And he gave us not much. And how else can you say it? When it's supposed to be the year of Mitch and you don't deliver and it's shockingly bad, those numbers, then don't you have to make the determination that he's probably never going to be even very good?
And even if you don't want to go down that road, you have to do something to challenge him.
Like you have to.
The coddling.
You can't worry about his feelings if you draft. Someone called earlier, Abdallah wants to draft your guy Hurts, and he was worried about if they would be worried on how Mitch feels. Too bad. It's
who cares
how
Mitch
feelings
feels?
Game.
Yeah. Listen, I don't. You think? Look at the model franchise in the NFL is always the Patriots. They get rid of guys, they release guys, they trade guys well before their prime is over, just so they can get more back. So they can keep this. They keep reloading. You can't worry about people's feelings. The only people you're going to piss off are the guys that spent their money on Trubisky jerseys. That's it. And if Trubisky can't handle it, look, he didn't get his starting job 2 years at North Carolina. You think his feelings were hurt then? Of course they were. But that's football. You didn't even win your job at your own school till your final year there. It's crazy. I don't care about his feelings. I want to win football games.
Since Tom Brady's come into the league, the Patriots have developed more quarterbacks successfully than the Bears have. Think about that. And that's him playing every year except one when he hurt his knee. They have developed more good quarterbacks than the Bears have.
It's amazing. And it's this idea where because he was selected second, I think people had this false hope that he was the savior of the franchise. And that's why they won't let go of this idea that he can't be what we're seeing. He has to be something better. And, you know, the Patriots have done it. Other teams have done it, too, where you draft quarterbacks, you challenge the quarterback that you have. And if the guy can't swim, you let him sink and you move on. And I'm hoping that Ryan Pace sees this, because if he doesn't see this, this is going to be a major problem going forward. Because if we go this entire offseason and there's no one to challenge Mitch Trubisky, this team is not, I don't think that you can assume that they will jump back to 12 wins, back to 13 wins, and be the leader of the division. I think we're staring straight in the face another 8-8 or worse season if we do nothing at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, that's what I don't want to be here.
Third place
about.
Schedule, though, guys. Third place schedule.
Okay, great.
Third place schedule.
You got the Giants. Welcome. You got the Giants and the Rams. How'd that work out for you this year with the Rams? Ugh. You scored 7 points against the Rams.
You were losing to the Giants at halftime 7-3, and they beat you the year before.
And they, you could argue they have a better quarterback going forward.
Maybe.
You could have that debate. I don't know if it's right or wrong.
Mitch or Daniel Jones.
Well, I'm saying they're happy with their quarterback position.
Yeah.
You know, they have a young quarterback who's throwing touchdowns. He's turned the ball over a lot as a rookie, but he's at least scoring points. Our guy doesn't score points.
They don't. The Bears don't score points. Not at all. And the field hasn't been flipped, and they're always playing from behind, so the defense can pin back their ears and get after the quarterback the way they should. It's just been an underachieving, miserable season. And now Minnesota, you watch. This is going to be like the typical Lovie Smith year. Lovie would always do like the last game or two where they were headed like they were 5-7 or something like that, and then they'd win like three out of their last four to make it somewhat respectable.
Yeah, the shine up the schedule deal at the end of the year when the games don't matter because they're playing for the coach.
The Vikings have nothing to play for. They have nothing. They're the sixth seed. So they're going to go out there, play a series or two, and Mitch is going to have a good game.
Of course.
And then people are going to, and then Ryan Pace is going to say,
this is going to be a cap dance party, isn't it?
Ryan Pace is going to say, none of us had the season that we thought. You know, I didn't have the season that I thought. Matt will tell you he didn't have the season he thought. Mitch will be the first to tell you he didn't have the season that he thought. We all have to get better at what we do. That's what you're going to get.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You're not going to get anything.
You know, he's going to go in. He's going to be the first one in. He's going to be the last one out, and we're just going to get after
it. We're disappointed. I know you're disappointed. We're disappointed, too.
Now, is that Mitch or is that Pace?
No, that was Pace, right?
Yeah.
It's the same guy. Yeah.
No, I'd say Mitch doesn't sound like
he's more like robotic, Ryan Pace. Mitch, and I'm not I can't do impersonations.
No, but your Ryan Pace is good. He's a Mimbo. That's what he is.
Oh, he's definitely a Mimbo.
That's what he sounds like, right? One,
right.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a Mimbo.
Well, he sounds like a Mimbo.
He better be at the playoff games on Saturday.
Who, Ryan Pace?
Yes!
No, he's scouting the Sun Bowl.
Jalen Hurts is playing on Saturday. Right. You should be there on Saturday.
When is the Sun Bowl?
I don't know.
And who's playing in said Sun Bowl?
I gotta look at when the Sun Bowl is. Let me find the Sun Bowl. Talk amongst yourselves.
Amy, you're talking about going back in the last 10 years, looking back at the Bears franchise. If there's one thing I could have done to go back in time, not to save Cutler from getting hurt in the AFC Championship game, it would have not allowed Ryan Pace to get a credential to the Sun Bowl to watch Mitch Trubisky look average against Stanford.
Right, but he came back at the end. It's what they all hold on to.
Oh, my God, yes.
Pace saw, but they never understood that it was because of his own doing.
It's amazing.
Like you were saying, I think someone was saying the other day, not playing for the 2 years or whatever it was his own doing. He couldn't beat out, what's his name, Marcus...
Williams.
Marcus Williams?
I think so.
That's
how much of an unknown he is that we don't even know his name. He started at UNC for a couple of years, and we vaguely know who he is. I think he played in the Canadian Football League.
Tuesday, December 31st, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl featuring Florida State and Arizona State.
They're great.
All right. Well, to be fair, Arizona State has a good freshman quarterback.
It's a freshman.
Yeah.
No, I know.
But look, this is where Pace has always said he's always going to draft a quarterback, right? He told us that when he took over. He's lied to us. Now you have a season where you have questionable issues with your own quarterback.
Yeah.
Now's the time again to draft a quarterback. Will he do it? He should.
Yeah, I agree with you. Outside of the Bears conversation, what was hot today? Did you guys do 2 hours of Bears?
I love the Abdallah and I did a lot of decade in review. Fred did. Yep. Fred and I, whether it's the good moments, the bad moments, the best years, the best moments, the biggest moments, like the poll question today. It's fun to. We had a lot of action. I mean, the Bulls had a turbulent decade. The White Sox probably had the worst decade with only 1 year of no postseasons.
Yeah.
The highest win total was 85. The Bears probably had the second worst decade because they only won one playoff game. Think about that.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because we were going through and it just kept on getting more depressing unless you talk about the Blackhawks. The Cubs. Yeah, the Cubs won the World Series. I get that. They ended the drought. But ultimately, the team of the decade is the Blackhawks. Most championships of the decade.
Over the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, the team of the... Yeah, they won... How many Cubs did they win? They won three Cubs. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the weight of the one that the Chicago Cubs won... that's going to be the thing people remember.
But if you're voting fairly and you're not voting based on popularity, the team of the decade is the Blackhawks.
Yeah. Listen, man, you got to stack rings.
I would imagine they have the most wins, obviously, because the Bulls wouldn't be able to compete with that. And, well, the Cubs could probably
get close. The Cubs could probably get close because they play a lot. They've won a lot of games every year Joe Maddon was there. So
Fred was ripping the Cubs' run here, saying they only got one and this and that.
Of course.
And I said to Fred, I go, Fred, if the White Sox this year surprise everybody and get to the ALCS, and then in 2021 they win the World Series, and then in 2022 they get to the ALCS again, but don't get back to the World Series, and then in 2023 they lose in the wild card, will you take that? And he said, yeah, of course. Like, anybody would take,
take the championship.
The last 5 years of the Cubs. Now, we're sitting here in the year that they didn't make it, and we're only saying, well, they only got one, and are they going to trade Chris Bryant? But still, if anyone would not sign up for a five-year stretch like the Cubs just gave us, you're a lunatic.
Nothing is more Fred Huebner than the complaining about the one Chicago Cub championship, even though in 2005, the White Sox won their one title. And now, did I miss something? Did they go on a run of...
No, they didn't make the playoffs the year after.
Were they a dynasty? Were they strung together a few championships there? Like, wait, there's nothing more that guy White Sox fan than complaining about what the Cubs have done, winning the championship, and then saying, ah, you only got one. That was cute. That was nice. What did you do, Fred? What did your team do? There's nothing more. Like, that is... That's a White Sox fan in this city.
I don't
want
to brand them all that way, though, because I don't like
that's what they all do. They all do that.
Not all of them.
Yes, they call up and they say, you guys spent 7 minutes talking Chicago Cubs baseball. You only spent 15 seconds talking about the White Sox. It's what they do.
That's like calling me, though, a Sox hater, which I'm not. Just because a lot of Cubs fans hate the Sox. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A lot of people don't.
I have many White Sox fans who care more passionately about the demise of the Cubs than their own team's success.
Oh, one of our best friends is a White Sox fan, and he...
That's all he cares about.
A better day for him than is a Cubs loss than a White Sox win.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
The famous story goes that Jerry Reinsdorf on the field in Houston went up to Harry Tynowitz after they won the World Series and swept the Astros. He said, hey, Harry, what did the Cubs do today?
See, and that's it.
That's the owner of the team.
That's the mindset.
But they're not all that way.
I think the majority. I will paint with a broad brush. The majority here. That's exactly what we're going to do here. So I think your time's over.
Happy New Year. Your time's up.
Let me collect all my binders computers.
Can I just say Monday, noon to 2, Sylvie, Yurko, and me.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be a weird
awesome
show.
That's going to be an awesome show.
We're going to have fun. We're going to talk about the last Bears game of the season.
Absolutely. That's going to be great. Yurko's going to be fired up.
I only say your time's up because I don't want you to feel guilty. Like, you have to hang out with us. That's
You guys got the Philly Godfather coming up, too. That's big.
Yes.
Cap's been very excited to put him on with you guys.
I heard he texted you earlier today.
We're going to talk some college football. The playoff games are tomorrow, finally.
And our guy Doug Kazarian's on with you guys.
Yeah.
So we'll get a lot of gambling conversation. Adam Rittenberg works for ESPN. One of our favorite college football guests will also join us. He joined our college football show throughout the fall many times. So we'll preview the college football playoff. We'll talk Bears and Vikings and lots of conversation with you at 312-332-3776.
All four of these college football playoff games should be great.
Absolutely.
You missed it. I said all four.
No, I heard you.
I heard you.
I heard what you said. You know, they were great because you had the SEC championship game, which was a playoff game. Alabama LSU was a playoff game.
Where we're arguing whether or not Florida three losses or Penn State with two.
Show. I'm out. I mean, make fun of me on my ride home.
Listen, it's perfect the way it is.
No,
did you enjoy the college football season? Did you enjoy this season?
Not as much as if there would have been eight teams, and Alabama could right their wrongs by being in it now.
Alabama doesn't deserve to be
Remember
in
that
it.
Fourth quarter? We were up in Evanston at bat 17, Abdallah. Yeah. We were up there doing the show, and we were like, oh, it's the middle of the season. It's not a playoff day. And guess what happened? In the fourth quarter, Lovie Smith and the Illini, they took care of business, and they knocked out Wisconsin. There you go. Playoff game.
10-win beard, 6-win coach.
Goodbye, Wisconsin.
And
that's
like
how it 19-year-olds works.
19-year-olds losing all their hopes on one game.
There it is.
Play better football.
Go bold or go home.
That's ridiculous. You guys are ridiculous. More football, more better.
If Wisconsin would have beat Wisconsin was beating Ohio State, if they would have finished that game, they'd be in. They might be in the playoffs.
I was talking to my mom yesterday on the way home, and we had a really good show. And she said to me, she goes, Abdallah's really good. I go, yeah, he's really good. I go, he's a little bit of a know-it-all, like we all were in our mid-30s.
See you guys.
That's the time to know it all, right?
Yeah, okay. It is.
Black and Abdallah in for every show for the rest of the day. Coming up next, we will talk and get the picks for the football weekend with the Philly Godfather. He joins David Kaplan each and every Friday at 11:30. He's up next right here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. One kiss is all it takes.
Welcome back. It's Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. In for David Kaplan today. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam A. Abdallah and at Chris Black. We are live from the First Midwest Bank Studios on State Street in downtown Chicago. It's a football Friday. Woo. We are looking ahead at the Bears and the Vikings and all the action in Week 17 in the NFL. Abdallah, lots to play for many teams. A lot of good storylines that we'll get into over the course of the next couple hours. Black and Abdallah, we are here in for Cap right now. We will be in for Carmen and Yurko from 12 to 2. And we actually will also do the triple show cover-up as we are here till 2:30 today. In for Waddle and Sylvie from 2 to 2:30. So we've got a lot of time to break down football action. We will talk to the Philly Godfather in a couple minutes. We'll talk to Adam Rittenberg at 12:30 to get you ready for the college football playoff. And at 1:30, we will talk with Doug Kazarian, and we will look at the gambling weekend a second time at 1:30.
You got to be careful this weekend because you got to make sure you remember who's playing in these NFL games, who's not playing in these NFL games, who has stuff to play for, who doesn't. You know, the Vikings and the Bears, the Vikings might just get some reps in early, and then they might pull everybody because they're locked into that sixth seed. And so now in the Bears, they have something to prove. Trubisky wants to get better, so that's an interesting game to break down. And then, you know, obviously the game of the night is San Francisco-Seattle, and then, of course, all the college football games as well.
That's Adam Abdallah. I'm Chris Black. We're in for David Kaplan today, and each and every time at during the week at 11:30 on Fridays, getting you ready for a Football Friday, we get to hear from the Philly Godfather.
You are listening to David Kaplan.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
The Philly Godfather on Cap and Company.
I spend my life trying not to be careless.
The Philly Godfather on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Best plays for the football weekend. It's the Philly Godfather. You can go to his website, thephillygodfather.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at the Philly Godfather. He joins us now here on Cap and Company. Chris Black and Adam Abdallah singing in for David Kaplan today. And Philly, if we take a look at the Bears heading into this game, they do not have a lot to play for, obviously, because they are out of the playoffs, but neither do the Vikings. How do you see this matchup kind of going this weekend?
Yeah, it's one of those crazy games to handicap. There's no stats to look at. There's no travel, no home field advantage. This game basically comes down to incentive by player or coach and who's on the field with the desire to prove something, like you guys just said earlier, or basically which team wants to end in a good note, and that definitely has to be the Bears here. I mean, the Vikings, like you said, are locked and loaded as the sixth seed in the playoffs. So it would be perilous. It would be touchy. It would have a fraught of danger if Minnesota played their starters. I don't think the fans or the Vikings organization wants to play Russian roulette heading into the playoffs here. So I know the Bears are banged up in some key spots, but I did, you know, read that Nagy still wants to win this game. I read a quote someplace where he said, being able to win this game is very important to us. So that definitely carries some weight here when you're trying to handicap this game. And the line originally reopened with Minnesota being a 2.5-point favorite. It dropped down to 1. And then about 2 hours ago, there was a big move on the Bears at +1. And now the Bears are 3-point favorites. So the Bears are definitely on the right side. Now, has the line maybe moved too far? It might be the case, but the Bears are definitely on the right side here.
The game of the night is Seattle and San Francisco. How do you see this one in a game that actually does mean something for both these teams?
Yeah, big playoff implications for a bunch of teams here. This Vegas line originally opened up a pick 'em, but with the injuries that came in bunches for the Seahawks, the market moved swiftly, and at a real accelerated pace. And by Sunday night, we saw this number blast up to that key number of 3 before knocking down the door and settling in at 3.5 at some of the sharper offshore betting houses. But there's still a bunch of 3s in the market out there that are slightly juiced. You guys know, if you've listened to me on Twitter or on Cap Show this year, you know, my money's on the 49ers this year. You know, I got big money on them to win the NFC West, to win the NFC, and to win the Super Bowl. So this would probably be a real nice spot for me to hedge some of those futures for a little bit of paper. But in my opinion, I'm not even scared here, man. As soon as this game opened up a pick'em, I was all over San Francisco at a pick. It's a huge revenge spot for the 49ers. If you remember last time they faced Seattle, Kittle was missing, and Emmanuel Sanders got knocked out of the game early, which really slowed down Shanahan's offense. And San Francisco really struggled after that to put up some points on the board until the last quarter of the game where they put up 14 points and eventually set the game into overtime where they missed a field goal and actually had an opportunity to win. Like I said earlier, Seattle, the much-wounded team here, San Francisco is definitely the right side. I bet them on the money line. If you can, try and lay 2.5 or 3 on the game because Russell Wilson, you know, as the opposing quarterback, the back door is always open whenever he's playing. I would hate to see anyone lay 3.5 on the game when the right side is the 49ers here at a pick or anything under a field goal.
The Philly Godfather on ESPN 1000 and the TuneIn app. Singing for David Kaplan today, it's Chris Black and Adam Abdallah. One of the games I'm looking at, Philly, the Cowboys have everything to play for. The Redskins have nothing to play for. But to me, the last couple of weeks, the Redskins have been frisky. What should we do with this game?
Yeah, they've been tough. They've been putting up some points. The early soft line on this divisional matchup came out a little heavy, in my opinion, with the Cowboys being large 14-point home favorites over the Redskins. And the market quickly reacted. It corrected itself as the bookmakers had to adjust their price, and this line dropped a full 3 points in the market. As of right now, the game is basically painted Dallas 11, minus 11 across the screen. There's a couple 10.5s out there lingering. I don't really like a side here, but I did double dip on the total. I went over 44 and 45 in this one. I'm expecting some points to be put up on the board. The Cowboys offense at home, as everyone knows, is much better than it is on the road. Dallas averages 30 points per game at AT&T Stadium, which is tied for the second best in the NFL this year at home. Then add the fact that they're fighting for the playoff lives. They're going up against a Redskins defense that's given up the 9th most amount of points this season, and I think they've given up right around 32 points per game over recent play over the last 3 games. So that's tied for the 4th worst in the NFL. And like I said, I like my chances here on the over. It's a pretty big bet for me. I know Haskins is out, but Keenan came in last week. He went 16 for 22 for 158 yards. He capped off a 99-yard drive by running into the end zone, and he set the game into overtime. Keenan can definitely play. And the way the Redskins have been putting up points against division opponents, I mean, they're averaging 31 points per game over the last 2 weeks against the Eagles and Giants, and I think this trend continues. Bet the over 45 here.
Another battle in the NFC East, the Eagles and the Giants. The Eagles have won their last 3. The Giants have won their last 2 games. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's my home team, my beloved home team, and I'm pretty sure they're going to make the playoffs. But this line, in my opinion, opened up a little too high to begin with. The Eagles popped out as 4.5-point road favorites over the Giants. The line shot up to 5.5 due to an overreaction off that big win against Dallas, and that's when the sharp money jumped in, and you know, they bet the Giants plus 5.5. It was a big purchase order that was sent out. If you guys remember, the last time we played New York at home, they took us into overtime with Eli, and actually had chances to beat us outright as 10-point underdogs. Now they got an upgraded quarterback in Danny Dimes. He's back. He's the better quarterback for the Giants. And to me, the books are basically begging for Eagles money here. I know over 70% of all tickets punched so far offshore and in Las Vegas have been on the Eagles. So you got to be real careful. You got to read between the lines. We should have never been 10-point favorites in Philly to start with against the Giants. Now oddsmakers are telling us we're basically a bigger favorite than the first time we played on the road, yet the Giants, you know, they get an upgraded, quarterback position. So I like the Giants here plus 4.5. I bet them plus 4.5.
The Philly Godfather on ESPN 1000 with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah in Philly. Both Adam and I are humongous college football fans, and we are so excited for the college football playoff tomorrow. The first game, Oklahoma, the number 4 seed, taking on LSU, the number 1 seed. What should we do with this game?
Yeah, I mean, I love LSU this year. I got huge futures on them. I bet them at the beginning of the year to make the playoffs plus 450 to win the SEC and to win it all. But to be honest, I think this line has been slightly over-adjusted, and there's some value on the dog here. The Vegas number came out 10 flat on LSU and shot up all the way to 14. With the driving force being the recreational sports bettor behind the move. 70% of all tickets punched so far have been on LSU. I think Oklahoma is coming all into this game slightly undervalued, basically because of their performance against Baylor. I could be wrong, but the Bears with Matt Rhule, who, by the way, is a great coach and is probably going to be an NFL coach real soon, had one of the best defenses in football this year. Baylor was ranked either 15th or 16th in opponent points per game and only gave up an average of 15 points per game over recent play over the last three games. I know Baylor held Texas to 10 points, Kansas to 6, and they held Oklahoma, who was averaging 40 points per game this year, which was tied for the fifth most in college football, to only 23 points if you take away that touchdown that they had in overtime. I definitely think the dog Oklahoma here can stay within the Vegas number. LSU's defense ain't bad, and they've played the much better competition. But there's a huge disparity in the defensive metrics when it comes to home-road splits. LSU's defense gives up almost 2.5 more opponent yards per play on the road than they do at home, 16 more points per game on the road than they do at home. And their opponent yards per play metric goes from 247 yards at home to 447 on the road. I'm going to be patient here. I think this line's going to keep climbing. I think you'll be able to get a better number on Oklahoma than the current number. But if it doesn't, I'm definitely going to be on Oklahoma plus 14.
Is there anything we're missing for the football weekend, for the college basketball weekend, NBA weekend? Anything you should tell us about, anything we should keep our eyes on this weekend?
I mean, Ohio State, they've played five teams ranked in the top 25. Clemson's only played two. They snuck by Texas A&M. There was a big scare against North Carolina. Ohio State's had the toughest schedule in college football this year, while Clemson ranks 34 spots below them. I think the wrong team's favorite here. I took plus three on Ohio State, and you can take them on the money line at plus 115. And then if you go to Iowa State and Notre Dame, I went under 57, I went under 56, I went under 55 in that game. You got two teams with solid defenses. Iowa State actually has a slightly better offense. So in a game like this, which I think is a coin flip, I'm going to take the plus 3.5 on the dog every time. So I like Iowa State plus the 3.5, and I like the under in that game as well.
Thank you, Philly. We appreciate it.
Take it easy, guys.
That's the Philly Godfather. Go to his website, thephillygodfather.com, and you can also follow for his picks at the Philly Godfather on Twitter.
Now, you and I talk a lot of college football gambling, and when it comes to the college football playoff, SP Plus has numbers for all of these. It's Bill Connelly's metric on ESPN.com, and it has numbers for all these bowl games, but you can basically throw out all these numbers except for the playoff game, because none of these games actually matter. So you never know how these kids are going to show up. You don't know who's going to play, who's not going to play, what the travel's doing to them, all this, the hoopla and whatever it is that leads up to bowl games. But for the playoff games, I feel like it's still a good metric, right? Because those that games actually mean something.
Yeah, two teams trying to play for something.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So SP Plus has the LSU-Oklahoma line at 6. So they agree with Philly Godfather to take Oklahoma and keep waiting for it to go up if you want to. And then Ohio State has them as a 6-point favorite right now. At SP Plus against Clemson.
And see, we will sprinkle in some college football talk throughout the next couple of hours here on ESPN 1000. That's the one thing that you, myself, and Jonathan Hood have covered with our Chicago College Tailgate football show for the last couple of weekends in college football is that people are underestimating Clemson.
Dude.
And I get the metrics are showing Ohio State, and I get that the gamblers are looking at Ohio State to just kind of crush Clemson. You heard the Philly Godfather there say that Ohio State's record is more impressive because of the teams they've played, and Clemson hasn't played anyone. I'm not ready to just assume that Clemson isn't going to show up and have a great game tomorrow, because what I've seen from them in the last month of the college football season is the fact that you could argue that they were the best team in the country. That's something you could do. They have the best quarterback. They have an offense that's rolling. And you know that Dabo Swinney is a really good single-game coach, and he's going to have this team prepared
tomorrow. They lead college football in both yards allowed per game and points allowed per game on their defense. They haven't given up more than 20 all season. And if you look, since that North Carolina game where they were kind of sleepy and they only won by 1 point really late in that game, Clemson has only scored less than 45 points once, and that was against South Carolina when they put up 38. Trevor Lawrence, 26 touchdowns, 3 interceptions since that game. This team is, and I know that Ohio State has been there too, but there's something about Clemson in the playoff and them having all of this experience. Their freshman quarterback last year, Trevor Lawrence, winning the national championship game as a freshman, having a chance to do it again this year, something has to be said for having that kind of experience going into these big games and knowing how to deal with everything that surrounds the game, because that wears you out too. Everything leading up to this game, all the press conferences, all the extra media between today or tomorrow's game and then leading up to the national championship game is something that teams that are new in this aren't used to. Ryan Day's been around this before, but Dabo Swinney, I think, is the better coach. I like Clemson in this game. I got them early when they were a dog. So now I don't know if there's value at 2.5, maybe a money line play, but when they were a 2.5-point dog, all over it.
You know, the other thing to kind of consider with that game is quarterback for Ohio State, Justin Fields, says his knee is 80% to 85%, and that was 3 days ago. So, you know, if for some reason he's not playing at 100% and it's not what we've seen from Justin Fields throughout the football season to this point because of the knee injury, like, obviously the better quarterback is Trevor Lawrence. And I think ETN in the backfield and what they can do offensively, T. Higgins is there as well. You know, Clemson has the potential to be the best team out of this playoff. Now, whether or not you want to, like, and we talked about it in our last college football show of the season, was that Clemson can either be the team, if they lose to Ohio State, everyone's going to point to and say, well, the schedule is soft. They weren't worthy of getting into the playoff because they weren't actually that good. But if they show up and they take care of Ohio State and they beat LSU or Oklahoma, whoever they face in the championship game, then we're going to do the opposite. We're going to say it doesn't matter that they had a soft schedule, because not only have they been the best team in recruiting for the last 5 years, but they've proven it, and they haven't lost in over two full seasons of college football. They are a true dynasty when it comes to college football. So a lot to play for tomorrow. I'm excited for the college football playoff.
Can't wait.
This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by your Chicago land and Northwestern Indiana Acura dealers. Visit today during the Acura Season of Performance event. Learn more at ChicagoAcuraDealers.com. Black and Abdallah in for David Kaplan here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. We continue talking football. It's a Football Friday with you right here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Chris Black, Adam Abdallah singing for David Kaplan here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We're going to talk a lot of Bears coming up in about 10 minutes right here on ESPN 1000. I've got a question for you regarding the Chicago Bears coming up in 10 minutes, Abdallah. But we are still looking ahead at the college football playoff. And if we take a look at tomorrow, we had a someone tweet us a couple minutes ago. It was Scott saying, this is what he said to at Chris Black and at Adam A. Abdallah. I love college football like you guys, but what about this for the college football playoff? If they go to 8 at the most, or 6, with the top two teams getting a bye, would you guys really be opposed to that? It was a conversation we were having with Sylvie about 40 minutes ago here during Crosstalk. More football, more better is his take. Should the college football playoff? Tomorrow we have four teams who are in it. We will get the two playoff games tomorrow. A lot of people, like Sylvie, think that the college football playoff should expand to at least 6 or 8 teams.
Look, it's coming. You know, the expansion is going to happen when the TV deals are up, and they're going to go to 8 games or they're going to go to 6 games. My problem is, it's not even having more football. I get it. More football, more fun. More games, more fun. More playoff, more fun.
There are games being played. We are watching a football game right now. North Carolina Temple on ESPN. There are football games to be played.
They're all money-making opportunities, right? But I think what you have to look at is what you're then debating, right? If we go to 6 teams, then we're debating Oregon, Baylor, Wisconsin. 2 2-loss teams and a 3-loss teams. If we go to 8, we're debating Wisconsin, Florida, Penn State, Utah, Auburn. I don't want these. There's an opportunity here where these games get out of hand. I know everybody's saying Ohio State, Clemson is going to be good, but the last time they played, Ohio State was shut out and Clemson won by 30-something, okay? Then you've got LSU, Oklahoma. There's a very good chance that LSU's defense played like they have the last 3 weeks of the college football season, and Oklahoma might get shut out. Not necessarily shut out. Oklahoma's going to score, but they don't have the defense to keep up. And LSU has shown that they can shut down good offenses. So there's a chance that these two games, 1 versus 4 and 2 versus 3, could be blowouts. It has been in the past. Usually every year we get a blowout in one of these games. So you're talking, you want LSU against Wisconsin? LSU would destroy Wisconsin. It wouldn't even be a game. Why do you want to see – I know you want to see more football, but at what cost, Chris? At what cost?
Well, I don't
do you want to see bad football?
Listen,
is that what you want?
The argument of more football doesn't make any sense. There are football games on. You're saying you want more football
matter.
Of consequence. That's what people want.
Yes.
Yeah, listen, and you make a good point. The conversation changes, but I don't think you make a decision based on expanding the playoff, based on this idea of we can't ruin the conversation. To me, four is perfect. Why? It's perfect because it matches with what basketball and college basketball does. Now, I get it. They have a field of 64, but it is all to the Final Four that one weekend. The four teams are there. It's a celebration of college basketball. It's an mm-hmm. event. Mm-hmm. That's what college football is trying to do with this. It's unrealistic to have 64 teams play off for the college football championship. So you select the four best teams after the regular season, and it's the closest thing you can do to mimic that last great weekend of college basketball. You get the college football playoff. That's why four, to me, makes a lot of sense. Listen, I'm not an idiot. It's going to expand at some point
for sure, of
the money involved and the conferences pushing for it. So I think the most logical thing you can do is you say each conference champion gets into the college football playoff. So boom, there's five teams. Then you say the group of five, whoever the best group of five team, you get into the playoffs. So this season, the best group of five team would be what? Memphis?
Ugh.
Right? Like, you'd have to drop all the way down to Memphis to get to that team.
And they don't
deserve 17th. Boise State is 19th. Appalachian State is 20th. Okay, but everyone loves the cute underdog card, right? They love that team to talk about and to root for. So you get in. Okay, there's six. And then you have two wild card spots. And you debate between Oregon, Baylor, Wisconsin, Florida for who the wild card spots are, and that's it. You're done with it.
Alabama would have gotten in if there would have been 6 or 18. If you have that, you say you go with Alabama just based on the stats and what they've been able to do this year.
Over Penn State or Florida?
Maybe not over Florida, probably over Penn State. Florida's defense was really good this year.
Yeah, they were. Dan Mullen's doing things in Gainesville.
But if it went to 8, Alabama's definitely in that playoff.
That's Adam Abdallah. I'm Chris Bleck. Coming up next, we talk Bears football with you right here on ESPN 1000.